6.5%, was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round-by-round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. My name is Chris, that is Anna, and the show is brought to you by the two of us. I don't think there's ads on the front, but if there is, not us, goes to this network that only replied to us once recently. How you doing, Anna? Like, I have to ask, how you doing? We recorded a week ago. Things have transpired.
Honestly, I feel like I've lived several lives between last week's episode and this week's episode. It's just, like, the playoffs just amplify everything. But, yes, especially this game 4 that really has aged me several years.
So, you know, thinking back to our last episode, which we had recorded on the Monday night because the series got underway on Sunday, we collectively looked at game 1 and said, despite everything that Nashville did, they did not have an answer to the Vancouver Canucks. The Vancouver Canucks could learn from that first game. And you had committed to the Canucks winning in 5. I had said, I'm a Canucks fan. I think they'll win in 6. We were full of confidence. Like, we're just,
especially
we're high on life. We saw
game 2, right?
Dare I say it, Bubble Demko.
Yeah. But we definitely were like, I think I uttered the words, Nashville will win a game, but it won't be in Vancouver.
I think you did say that. Yep. And I published the episode, Tuesday morning. And I think 30 minutes later, news breaks. Demko's not starting tonight. He's hurt. DeSmith's in net. And, like, Canucks Nation collectively had a big inhale moment.
Like, exactly.
What's going on?
BC held their breath for sure.
And, you know, we'll get into sort of what's ultimately happened since that moment. But I think you summed it up quite well. So, you know, went and retweeted the episode, and then like an hour later retweeted. Just so you know, we were full of confidence when we recorded this last night. Yep.
Just like caveat, we were saying all this with the idea that Demko would still be in that. She was not.
And we had talked a little bit about the Abbotsford Canucks, and we were talking about how with Seeloff's, you know, coming to Vancouver as like the emergency, you know, backup goaltender, practice goaltender, whatever, that the Abbotsford Canucks were going to have to lean on Tolopilo. Sachenko is a backup, blah, 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 blah. So, again, we'll get into this, but I posted on Threads earlier tonight, who would have thought that the Vancouver Canucks backup, their backup to the backups, and Abbotsford's backup to the backups, backup to the backup, are all getting the job done.
Yeah. It's a weird old game. Playoff hockey is definitely built different. So, yeah. I'm very happy to be where we are. It's just a strange turn of events.
It totally is. So you and I, we're going to recap the ride that we've been on for the better part of the week. We'll recap the game that took place today. We'll take a gander as to what might happen in game 5 and beyond. Again, I don't know how to read the situation. And we'll also take a spin around the rest of the league because it is playoffs, and apparently our ability to predict playoffs in the East ain't so good.
Yeah.
The West were kind of okay-ish.
Yeah.
Kind of okay-ish.
We'll get into it.
Save for one. But yeah, you know what? Let's rewind. Where were you the moment that Frank Saravelli broke the news that Thatcher Demko was injured and DeSmith would be starting?
So I found out in a very unusual way because just to give you a peek behind the curtain, I wasn't doing so great this morning. I went out for some, like, adult beverages last night for...
I was talking about Frank Saravelli breaking the news about Demko.
Sorry.
We haven't got to the Frank Saravelli breaking the news about the Smith.
Thank you for pulling me up on that.
We'll get there.
Put a pin in that story. We're coming back to that. I was at my desk, and I think I was, like, had just maybe 10 minutes before, like, published the tweet, like, promoting our episode. You published the episode, I wrote a tweet about it, and then it was just like, oh, Demko is, like, he just didn't seem real at first, even though, like, it's Demko, it's goalies, like, stuff happens, but you just think, oh, of course, like, Canucks, like, we can't have anything nice, even just for a day, to enjoy game one win. That's what I was thinking.
That was sort of the collective feeling I had. I saw your post. You had shared it in the C4 Discord moments before I had to jump into a training class. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. And then I'd sort of forgotten. And then I, you know, work. And then I come out, and then I had to relive that experience a second time and really, you know, grip the reality of how bad things might be. And during that period of time, some people I know and trust are sharing some information that suggests that Demko isn't coming back for game three, let alone round three. It was like, oh, man.
Yeah, that's the thing, because you just think, like, on the one hand, you're thinking, well, if it wasn't something serious, wouldn't he just keep playing? Not that that's necessarily a good outlook or perspective to have, but that's kind of hockey playoffs, and that's what it teaches you. But on the other hand, you're thinking, oh, well, like, I do hope it is something not serious they're pulling him out for, and it's best to be precautionary, blah, 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 and then you're hearing, oh, like, he's probably done from the series. And then, like, as the week went on, it was more, like, coming out maybe at the end of round two. And then today there's more swellings around it that maybe.
Yeah, like, this, I mean, Sarah Sivian had commented that playoffs, and then that got walked back. Like, it's unknown, and I know nothing.
Yeah,
we don't know. But nothing. Presuming it's, let's say, a knee and a ligament issue. From what little I understand, having blown my ACL, is that the concern is around the general swelling and whatnot that occurs afterwards. But there are means to add support to the knee until you have the surgical repair. And that when your knee is actually in flex, it's your muscles that are supporting the joint. It's no longer the ligaments. It's when your muscles aren't engaged that the ligaments need to do their job. So I don't know what it takes as an NHL goaltender, but I don't think they generally engage in any way, shape, or form without their muscles being activated. So, you know, again, presuming that might be it, and my, you know, absolutely no understanding of orthopedic surgery beyond the experience I had, maybe there's a chance. But looking at game two, knowing that Casey DeSmith is in net, and this is the back is to which the bandwagon must all climb on top of, Canucks fans showed up chanting, let's go Casey, start a game two. Awesome. And then Anthony Beauvillier gets a tip-in goal.
Yeah.
A minute 14. Mid-chant, and it's like, oh, not Casey's fault. Like, that tip was stellar, and unfortunately DeSmith going left, puck tips right, Nashville gets the opening goal, and we had a return to the same sort of experience that we saw in game one, where Nashville was getting in front of every single puck that Vancouver was trying to throw at Saros. The teams were trying to hit everything that was skating. Was it 4-4 shots, I think, in the first period, but it felt like a good game of playoff hockey. The Canucks felt like they were still in. However, you know, two quick goals midway through the second, and that night was done. I mean, Nikita Zadorov did score, but it never felt to me that Vancouver really had what they needed in the tank to get back in the game. And as we're going to sort of talk about in games three and four, you have Nashville getting in all the shooting lanes, blocking shots. I think, was it game two that Vancouver had something like 80 some odd shot attempts?
Yeah. But the actual
and of which they didn't hit the net on all of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, look at it. So 18 shots on goal, 30 block shots from Nashville. So that gets you up to, what, just under 50 shots. And then there were another, like, apparently 30 shots wide. Mm.
Yeah, it was, like, that mixture of things. But, like, we've kind of talked about, like, what your technique is when you're chasing the game. Like, getting physical but not ill-disciplined. Like, Nashville's technique is they're not as good as Vancouver. Then they just, like, aren't as good a team. Overall, but are they, like, were they more engaged in, like, in the whole series? You could say, yeah, like, for sure, they're physically engaged, they are, like, defensively engaged, so, yeah, like, they, that's their, like, that's, like, you can't fault that, like, I think they played well, but it's kind of one of those things where it's, like, but, like, they didn't have Thatcher Demko, but they didn't. Nashville were blocking all their shots, but like Canucks still should be able to overcome those things, but they couldn't and they didn't.
And Vancouver had opportunity, right? You have in the first period alone in that game, you've got the Vancouver Canucks getting back to back power plays and not getting any opportunity to score. I'm going to fast forward a little bit here, but I feel through this series that Vancouver is trying too hard to score pretty goals.
Yeah.
And that might be the result of how Nashville is in every shooting lane and Vancouver feels compelled to not sort of set it up, throw it on net because they don't think that it'll get through. So they're trying all these, you know, additional sort of cross ice passes. But on the power play, you have space, and they're still trying to like thread the needle. It has worked,
but
in this particular game, did not.
Yeah, and like you say, like, yeah, they're trying to make the perfect pass instead of just passing it, and they're trying to make the perfect shot instead of just shooting it. And that is kind of a vicious circle of them not getting the shots, them not getting the goals, so they're losing confidence. So instead of having that shoot first mentality, it's like, oh no, I'm going to mess it up. Subconsciously, of course. But like, yeah, maybe someone else will do a better job than me. And yeah, that's...
Yeah, well, the Vancouver... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we just saw that, like, that's where that sort of seemed to start and has gone on.
Yeah. Well, the Vancouver Canucks do lose game two, 4-1. And for me, the loss was disappointing. It was a weird game. I wanted more from it. And someone had commented, well, you know, it's playoffs. You generally don't get four straight wins. And I'm like, I know. I predicted them in six. They're going to have to lose two. I just don't like it. I wanted them to win six games straight. Like, that's what I wanted. Canucks in six with six wins, right? Like, I don't think I was prepared for the loss. So you got DeSmith in net, Demko's uncertain, the Canucks are off to Nashville, and if there's one thing that we know about Nashville fans is they get behind their team. Bridgestone Arena can be rocking. However, Vancouver, knowing this, decided that they would go and try to negate the crowd as best as they could through very effective special teams play.
I would say that Nashville...
I think they figured out...
The Nashville game operations team also did a pretty good job of tuning down the crowd when they had the anthem be this very slow acoustic version of the Star Spangled Banner, which may be one of the worst things that I've ever heard.
If you've watched the movie Mystery Alaska, yes. Little Richard sings the anthem and he sings it slow with purpose. You're right. That's what it kind of felt like. It was very slow rolled. Nashville got themselves into some penalty trouble. Actually, the Vancouver Canucks got themselves in penalty trouble. But there's one bright spot about Vancouver so far is their penalty kill has returned to form. Mm-hmm. Very aggressive, very good at preventing any high-quality opportunities on net. But Nashville not quite having the same answer the Vancouver Canucks. After Michael McCarron proceeded to try to murder, death, kill Casey DeSmith, the Vancouver Canucks made him pay by getting their first goal, take the crowd out of the game on the power play. Then Ryan McDonagh goes and hooks Nils Höglander a little bit later in the period. And again, Vancouver goes and does what – or sorry, not that's not the penalty. It was the Luke Evangelista roughing on Quinn Hughes. Vancouver does what they do best and Brock Besser scores. 2-0. Vancouver's up. But what concerned me more about this game was that Vancouver in games 1 and 2 were putting the puck on net or towards the net and struggling to get the puck through to the net. Block shot or they'd miss. In game 3, they had like next to no shot attempts. Like they had got three shots in the first period. They had scored a goal on one. So, hey, I guess it doesn't matter how many shots you take as long as the ones you do go in the net. 6 shots in the second and then 3 in the third. Like, if there was ever a hockey version of parking the bus, we saw it in the third period in game 3. And for those that don't get the parking the bus reference, if you watch soccer, football, you know what that is. Hold on for your dear life. Defensive play. Who cares about the offensive side of the pitch?
Yeah. And there's two sides to that low shot totals, right? Like, one, it's going to be concerning, especially when, like, you're staring down the barrel of, like, yeah, being behind in the game, as we will see later, and you're not making the shots count. But, like, two, the Yusei Saras, like, let, like, his percentage, save percentage is, like, bad and should be even worse. Like, if your opponent is not getting that many shots on net and you're still letting them in, then yeah, I think that's a real area of concern for Nashville, and hopefully Canucks continue to exploit that.
How did you feel in the third period when Vancouver already down a man, Brock Besser being called for tripping, has to deal with, and up to this point, their penalty kill, stellar. Nikita Zadorov goes and fires the puck over the ice to go to put the Canucks down, you know, two men for what, 30 seconds, I think it was. And at this point in the game, the Canucks had already sort of done the park the bus, and Nashville was just throwing everything that they could at DeSmith. They were doing like everything, crashing the net. You name it, they tried it. Like, credit to Vancouver, everyone was laying down blocking shots. It was like a role reversal. Vancouver was trying to block everything. The problem was Nashville was throwing even more. Was there a little clench going on? You know, the butt muscles just...
Oh, yeah. It was
getting a workout.
Squeaky bum time for sure. But, like, yeah. Like, I do think that there was some questionable calls. But once again, like, puck over glass might be a stupid penalty, but it is a penalty and it's been in the rule book for a while, so... Like, no arguments there. Yeah. Yes, I was incredibly tense. That's not how you want to be at, like, game 3 of the first round. Like, clinging on for dear life. But at the same time, you do have that whole winning ugly thing. And when you are behind the eight ball, when you do not have penalty luck or goalie luck, just, like, find any way. And that's important, too.
It's funny, though. They get through that two-man disadvantage. And I'm thinking, you know what? Done deal. That was until Evangelista scores to, you know, what, 3 minutes left in the third? And then the butt was getting tight again. It was real full clinch. Mm-hmm. It was seriously, I'm fully toned now from that game.
Yeah, that's all the exercise we need.
That's the type of workout I got.
Yeah, I was going to say, also your watch, I'm guessing, also thought you were having a workout or a heart attack or something.
Well, my watch, I've shared this on Threads, I've shared this in C4 Discord. Each time the Vancouver Canucks score, I celebrate, and I do a lot of clapping, and I throw my arms and all that. My watch, in two of the three Canucks wins, has immediately alerted me to suggest that it thinks I have taken a poor fall, and should it contact my emergency contact. So it didn't in this game. This game was a little bit different. This game was like, you know, blood pressure issues.
Yeah.
Maybe, but.
Also, side note, when, like, over what age are you, like, when does it become having a fall rather than just falling over? I think that just shows your age, doesn't it?
Maybe. I'm there right now. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, but the Canucks get the win, 2-1. Okay. You know what? Great. This is maybe they've settled things down. They've shown what they can do when they don't get shot opportunities. They'll learn their lesson going into game four. Spoiler alert. Lesson was not learned.
That's for sure. So yeah, let me pick up my story about when I learned that She Loves was going to be starting. So yeah, like I said,
because DeSmith is now,
yes,
hurt.
Exactly. So I had a few drinks last night for my birthday, which is tomorrow or today as you listen to this. So I am also old now as well.
Happy birthday, thank Anna. Not as old as me. You're still young.
Yeah. Young at heart.
Not a day over 22.
I mean, thanks. Canucks are adding some gray hairs though, for sure. But yes, so I was definitely on the struggle bus this morning. The only thing I really checked on my phone was the score of the Arsenal-Spurs game. And yes, once again, North London is red. That's about all I checked. And then...
Well, having watched that match, let me tell you, the first half was definitive. The second half,
also,
don't worry about the second half.
Don't draw pictures on the score sheet. Winning ugly, the Arsenal and Canucks story. So honestly, I didn't look, like, go on any sort of social media until like 1 p.m. Like, I'm about to head out the door to go watch the game somewhere, and I see Eddie Lack's Instagram post, and it's a meme of him like taking down each of the Canucks goalies, and then I was like, well, I get the Demko one, but wait, Smith? And then I go on Twitter and I'm like, oh, DeSmith is hurt. And you're just like, how does this happen? So yeah, that was quite a shock.
Well, and it's like hurt to the point that they're not even backing him up. Like, he is in the game, not dressing.
He was the e-bug for the game.
Tell people, how do you say his name? Tolipilo?
Tolipilo.
Yeah.
Just call him Tolo. Anyhow, he backed up. Baby Canucks call him.
Tolo? Yeah. All right.
But yeah, that was wild.
Yeah.
Him sitting there on the bench,
backing
up, and his facial expression was just perfect of... What am I doing here?
Yeah. Well, it's not so funny, but I would imagine when he got the call, hey, you're going to make the trip to Nashville. Oh, okay. Like, he never in a million years thought he'd have to throw the gear on, let alone sit on a bench, right? Like, it was just a matter of, I get it. Seloss has to back up. I'm now the emergency guy. Well, guess what? Apparently, you're going to start in game five the way things are going.
Yep.
I hope you limbered up.
Yeah, and like I said, like, we kind of talked about this when She Loves came up as the practice goalie / e-bug for game one. Like, they were going to, like, I don't think it necessarily showed faith in Tolpilo that he could take the baby Canucks far in the playoffs. They were going to do it anyway, like, but it was a good opportunity for Tolopilo to show that, like, you know, build on his very good season. But yeah, like, how the turntables. We should say, like, by all accounts...
The timetables.
Yeah. But by all accounts, this isn't a Thatcher Demko injury. Like, it's a precautionary step of he tweaked something. It's all very mysterious, like it
Yeah,
will
he
be.
Practiced on... Where is he? Practiced on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then the decision was made after the practice.
Yeah.
Some were suggesting that the McCarron hit did more damage than it was worth. I don't know. Like, you know, the way DeSmith took that hit was epic in its own right. And when he got up, you saw him smiling. And like in my mind, I think DeSmith baited McCarron into that hit, baited him into the penalty, which that's some big brain hockey stuff there if he truly did that. But it should be noted McCarron did get fined by the league $2,500, and that fine may have been the result of not so much the hit, but the hit that the backup goaltender with the starting goaltender out. We don't know what it is, though. I think the rumor is lower body, so it could add up. It just didn't – like, it's just like Demko. Like, Demko was fine. No indication that there would have been anything wrong. So I don't think we would have ever thought anything was wrong with DeSmith because, again, the hit also happened early in the game. He didn't seem to –
Yeah,
and
he did.
Guy was smiling.
He did talk about that hit and said, like, he thought it was funny, like, that the guy tried to run him and said, like, well, I'm wearing a ton of pads that did not affect me. But it's funny that, like, it was funny to him that he felt like he was identified as a threat. And it helped him focus on the game, he said. So I do not think it was that, but you never know, so. But he should be back and ready for game five if he is called upon to do so.
Yeah. So game four. Vancouver, I mean, okay, they got 20 shots on goal for the game. It did not feel like Vancouver got 20 shots on goal. The number of times that they were trying to go for that extra pass, like, hey, I'm on a breakaway. Who can I pass to? I mean, okay, Suter, in fairness, Suter had, I don't know who it was, draped over his back, but he quite literally turned around and looked to pass instead of just throw the puck on the net and hope for a rebound.
Yeah, totally. And I also thought that, like, he was being held back when he was skating, but then on the replay you say, like, he didn't get really caught until he was right in front of the net. He didn't get caught. Like, so that's just how fast he can skate, apparently. But yeah, like, Suda had a couple moments like that.
That is
where it was passed.
Yeah, and that was a good example as to what was happening collectively. Mm-hmm. Like, how many opportunities did the Vancouver Canucks have where it's like, be selfish, shoot. Oh, no, you want to get that extra pass. Maybe it's because that Brock Besser goal was beautiful in the first period to take the crowd out momentarily. Off a face-off. Juice drew it up. Ian Cole's a nobody. And... if you saw the intermission, that's sort of the reference there. But it was essentially back to the blue line, across to JT, who peeled out of the faceoff to the right side. JT threw it to Brock, wide open goal, puts it in the net. But then from that point on, it was all Nashville. Like, Nashville was throwing everything that they could at Seelofs. Makes sense. The backup's backup is in net. Make him work. And while I kind of wish one of those three goals that Nashville scored was stopped by Seelofs, for me, it was that third goal, the one at the start of the third period. Early, he, I don't know if he overcommitted it or what it was. He essentially got taken out of the net, but had left so much room for Forsberg to bank it in with his skate.
Yeah.
With a non-distinct kicking motion where his skate didn't leave the ice.
Yeah. I'm going to say, like, I think banking is a generous term. But yeah, you're right to point out that it was, like, a lapse by Seelofs as well. It wasn't, like, yes, I do think that was a kick. But it was still a mistake. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the only goal I sort of pin on him. Wish you didn't have your positioning...
and to
so screwed up
yeah.
at that moment.
And he was keeping Canucks in the game for a good portion of that. The reason it was that one, like, two-goal game up until late is he did not let, like... Because Nashville had, as you say, more opportunities to go ahead, and he, yeah, kept Canucks in it.
Yeah, like the Jankowski goal, that was a beautiful deflection, that tip-in. That's a good goal, that Jankowski goal, good goal. The Nyquist goal, 2-on-1, mm-hmm. you know, it's a 50-50. You sometimes stop them, sometimes don't. The Nyquist wrist, stellar. What's interesting, though, is that the Vancouver Canucks now down, and they're getting outshot to the nth degree mm-hmm. by Nashville. Like, Vancouver did not outshoot Nashville at all in any of the periods, and Vancouver was at one point down 2 goals. Mm-hmm. Like, to your point that you had raised earlier, Saros' save percentage ain't too hot. And I had commented during the game on Threads that I really wish Vancouver would throw more pucks on the net, because Saros was having difficulty with both rebounds and then tracking rebounds. And in my mind, you take advantage of that by making him work even more mm-hmm. and get one of those, you know, gritty blue collar goals, crash the net, have some traffic in front. But Vancouver was trying to, like, thread every single needle, get that additional pass. And it wasn't just Suter who he'd referenced earlier. I think Dakota Joshua was guilty of this. Petey was guilty of this. Miller at one point passed it back to no one.
Yeah.
The point, like, when he was in a shooting lane, it is just so frustrating to see. But credit to Vancouver. They did not give up. When they pulled the seal off late in the third period, it was like, what, 3.5, 4 minutes left in the game. He's skating to the bench. The puck's on Quinn Hughes' stick. Credit to Quinn for surviving this game. Mm-hmm. Because if he wasn't being hit by one Predator, he's being hit by two of them at the same
time. Yeah, Predator's the apt word.
And in one of the most, less than graceful zone entries, Vancouver overloads. Brock gets a goal exactly where I've been sort of shouting at my TV as to where the team needs to be. Get the puck on net, crash the net, guys in front, gets that goal. And I'm like, oh, so they have a chance. But I still wasn't feeling like confident yet that they would come back.
Mm-hmm. Neither. And like, that was the early. I was just going to say the early. The second goal was the early goalie pull too. So like, Shelovs was pulled whilst the puck was.
Yeah, they did the net. It again, and this.
Yeah.
And you know, graceful zone entry or not, Nashville gets an opportunity to get it down the ice, put the puck on net, hits the post. Their bench was celebrating hard. I mean, I get it. It should be a sure goal. You don't score. How many times, like, I mean, look at the P.S. Suter breakaway, non-breakaway. That was then when Nyquist comes back down the ice, scores a goal. You see opportunities like that missed sitter. You know it's going to haunt you. Well, unfortunately for Nashville, Brock Besser got himself a hat trick in this game. Scores with 8 seconds left on the clock. Ties up the game. I'm scaring the dog. I'm scaring the cat. My neighbors don't know what's going on. My watch is trying to call 911.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, I was excited.
Yeah. We were confused, screaming, I think I would put it as. Like, weren't quite sure whether it had gone in yet, but once we realized, we did shout the house down, and yes, also terrify a cat who was pretty scared in the first place, and yeah, did not enjoy that.
Anyhow, you could sense that Nashville was somewhat, not broken, but starting to crack. Like, you could see the body language where, oh my God, did this happen? Like, I would almost think back to when, was it Taze that scored in game 7 of that first round in 2011 to tie it up?
I believe where, so, yes.
Yeah, like I just remember, I think it was Taze, but whomever it was, when he scored, it's like, oh no, not again. Like, this is why is this happening to me? Like, that's sort of what it felt like. And Vancouver, from the face off, decided that they would try to do what Nashville did to them in the third. They brought the puck in. They controlled it. They threw it around. And it, you could feel like, oh, Vancouver's going to score here. Nashville's on their heels. And Lindholm with a beauty. Canucks won the trade deadline. Even though that trade took place 2 months before the deadline.
Yeah. I know. It is kind of wild. It's just like the joy that was in, like, those that was so visible on the ice. And it's just like, it's not just relief they won the game, even though they're behind the eight ball. You can see, like, they like playing for each other. Like, Brock Besser, I mean, how deserving is he of, like, the success that he's having right now? Like, he's been through some tough times, so, and yeah, like, Lindholm, maybe less, like, of a journey with the Canucks, but, like, after a hot start, he's really struggled, and he's been in a new city, and, like, maybe struggled to fit in a little bit, but, yeah, the joy and the happiness of his teammates for him, it's just wild.
Yeah. So the Vancouver Canucks win an unlikely game four and come back to Vancouver in a game five possible series ender. The Vancouver Canucks could make your wish of Canucks in five come true.
They could. Who would have thought? Not me. Like, as soon as I...
So we don't know who's going to start this game. Who?
100%. Like, that's a valid point now. Like, I would say the people calling for Shelov's start instead of DeSmith in game two, I was not one of them. Like, we've kind of said you've got to bank on Casey at this point, but, you know, it's a legit conversation now, surely.
Yeah. And that's, I don't think a knock against DeSmith in so much as it's, well, Shelov's played well, and he seemed to get better as the game was going on. How do you not sort of give him that start? But then convention states, a player shall not lose their position due to injury. If that were the case, then Tom Brady never gets a start in New England in the NFL years ago. Like, I'm not trying to suggest that Tom Brady and Artis Seelovs are, you know, one and the same. But the fact remains, you just don't know. But I'm going to have to ask you this, Anna. Do the Canucks still win it in five? Knowing what you now know and what has transpired, do you still have the Canucks in five?
Yes.
Bold.
It is. Bold. But, like, you know, they know the efforts of the last few games are not good enough to even win them this series, never mind, like, to get them far in the playoffs. I think they're keenly aware of their shortcomings. Yes, I'm still concerned about Pedersen, and we'll talk about it a bit more later, but, like, I do think the Canucks do have another gear in them, and just the morale boost of this comeback win, of winning when they had no business winning, really might be something. Are you sticking with six?
No, I want them to win in five. I do not want Vancouver to go back to Nashville for a game on Friday, May 3rd. I just do not want it at this stage.
Yeah, and, like, honestly, JT Miller, like, made a good point, as well as talking about their shortcomings. It's 8.5 hours of flying just to get to Nashville and back. They don't want to do that again. And... You know,
because, you know, you have to consider if they go to Nashville, that's a long trip there. You play a game and depending on the result, and there's no guarantee you go into Nashville a third time to get a win. They have to make a long trip back to then lock it up in game seven at home. I'd rather, you know what, you're at home, get her done. Mm-hmm. But that's not to knock the fact that Nashville is showing that they are still in this series. Like, this is not me being overconfident. If you were a Preds fan listening to this show, buy those tickets to that game on Friday. Please buy them. I have no problem with you supporting your team, and I think you rightfully should. I just don't want you to be able to go and watch hockey because I'm then not as confident that Vancouver closes it in game six.
Yeah.
I think Vancouver closes it in seven, but the way things have gone, six is the worry for
me. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Anyhow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll take ourselves a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast brought to you by Anna and Chris.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And, yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
I think they showed a graphic during tonight's game. Pettersson has scored one goal since he signed his contract. What's happened to Petey?
He had another bad game. Like, there's no dancing around that. I guess the, like, only defense you can come up with is that he's literally not getting paid right now, so don't say he's a waste of money. Like, that hasn't started yet. But, yeah, he's absent. Like, you need him to be a star, especially when you need more shots on goal. Like, he's one of the people to do that, to create a moment when you are struggling. And, like, I think people will point out the, you know, in the game two, the Nashville goal where PD turned over the puck and then didn't make the right defensive play. To me, I was just like, well, mm-hmm. We're so used to him being great defensively, yes, as well as offensively, but his job is to score goals. Like, it's not to prevent goals. Like, it wouldn't, that one play doesn't concern me that much. It's the overall lackluster lack of confidence, which is so rare from PD mm-hmm. too. I mean, he literally got ran over by Nashville yeah. in the goal celebration. And he looked dead inside after.
Well, okay, that was odd. That there was no pushback.
Yeah, like, though,
not necessarily from Petey. Like, I'm not yeah. suggesting Petey gets that. Like, it takes on the crowd. But no one on, like, no Canuck came over to even, you know, have a game of stinky glove.
It's a game of stinky glove? Yeah. Like, that's kind of a moment you do want JT Miller or Zadorov, really. Someone like that. Or, like, even Ian Cole, like, to get in someone's face.
Well, I wonder how.
Well,
I'm curious. Who was on the ice?
Yeah, I don't
goal?
Actually.
Like, who would we. I mean,
by the way, like, it could.
To be honest, a Vancouver Canucks should go over, but.
Or, like, was there any drawing with the bench? I didn't, like, see it, if there was any. You may have saw Rick Tocchet trying to comfort Petey, and Petey staring off into the distance as if his soul has left his body. But yeah, I mean, that was crappy. I also hated that, yeah. like, from Nashville.
Yeah, so,
it was gross.
I mean, if you were to consider who they have on the ice, Roenick might have been the only player who you'd think would go in. Like, is Hughes going to be over there?
No.
Is McKayev going to be over there? Actually, it's very interesting here that the van on ice for that goal shows the Vancouver Canucks only having four skaters on the ice. McKayev, Quinn, Roenick, and Hughes, and then Seelos is the other player that they have, being that he's in net. But they don't actually show and it wasn't a power play goal.
I know. I was just checking that because I was like, that won't be right. Anyway, that's bizarre.
And I'm looking at the game summary sheet from NHL.com. Anyhow, but that's the thing, is there was no response to that. But one of the things about Petey that I'm genuinely wondering, has he picked up a late season injury? that he has been dealing with and sort of playing through. He doesn't look at all to be the same player. During the broadcast, I think the panel had suggested that he's lacking confidence, and that may very well be true. But to me, there's more going on. Like, he doesn't seem to be as engaged. Like, he's not, it's not like he would throw his body, but he wouldn't back down. He'd take a bump, he'd get back up. Mm-hmm. He was still getting chances, but he almost seems to want to defer to the pass as opposed to the shot. And when was Petey a guy that would be scared of shooting?
Yeah, it seems very unlike him that he's too much in his head. Like, he's so instinctive as a player. And it just seems to come so naturally to him to make that play. And, yeah. Like, in terms of being hurt, we've seen him struggle with his wrists, like, on and off, basically, for the last, two seasons? Does seem like that's still a concern. Is it, like, it's such a huge problem, like, now? Maybe, but it's just, like, it's a whole... Maybe that's feeding into the confidence thing, because that looks totally shot right now. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, you almost want to play, like, JT Miller's attitude. Like, he thinks he's the best player in the world. Like... And it doesn't really matter to him what anyone else thinks. Like,
some nights he is. Yeah,
and some nights he is. But, like, he's so hard to knock off his stride confidence-wise. Like, he, even in his don't give an F era, like, he still thought he was great. He just couldn't be bothered and clearly, like, felt let down by his teammates. But, yeah. Petey's a little bit more in his head, it seems.
So what you're telling me is Petey needs to start dropping some F-bombs.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I did hear a giant loud F-bomb from JT Miller during the game today. As well.
It would not be a hockey game with JT Miller if you didn't actually hear it. I had asked post game 4 win for people on Threads to, you know, share some thoughts. And I'd actually, you know, I sell it like we do. You and I are very clear. If you leave us a message, you reach out to us, you say, hey, I've got a comment for your show, we will read it verbatim. We have no shame. And there are very few things that are not suitable for air. Actually, the only rule is we, you know, would never give Wyatt or Bowman a chance to have anything contributed. Because, again, just in, they know what they did.
Yeah, and, like, good taste, you know. This is a family show.
Yeah. Kathy Richards, who is at Kathy_Richards61 on Threads, commented about the Garland pass. I think that's specifically the one that scored on the Lindholm goal. Her magic is my Magic Miller jersey. So she's got a Miller jersey, and when she wears it, good things happen. And then not panicking team, of course, but also fans. I'll admit, I'm not the most optimistic person, mm-hmm. but I have not reached a point of panic, and I don't think I will in this series. I might be disappointed if it doesn't go the way, but it's not to that stage of panic. I don't know if the team has it in them to panic. When they were down 2 goals, there was definitely no panic, but I might argue that it didn't seem like they had much drive there either until late. Once the goalie was out, then it was, you know, all hell broke loose.
Desperation station, right? But, like, I'll admit, like, yeah, I was moving on mentally from the game by the time the goalie was pulled, you know, like, move on to the next one. So,
I
checked out.
And in fact, I was sort of thinking, like, okay, what do the Canucks need to do to take this series back in Vancouver? I wasn't turning it off. I wasn't getting out of my seat and leaving, but I was sort of starting to think sort of longer term. And then I went all out the window. Another comment that I got was from Joel Daly at Daly CWWP. The history and lore connected to the Canucks just continues to grow. This is another chapter, and our love for this team blossoms again this spring. The playoffs are never easy, but we always find moments and heroes. And I think that's so true, is that, like, the Canucks have now gotten 3 wins with 3 different goaltenders mm-hmm. in this first series. They have come back from a game that I think it would be hard to disagree that the Canucks weren't really in it beyond the first maybe 5-10 minutes. And despite all of the adversity, they're finding ways to get W's. And, you know, I will be the first to admit, while it is fair to go and say, maybe they didn't deserve to win those games, but they did, you can also say this is the type of game where, despite not being good enough to win, you find a way to win regardless, so that when you figure out how to win, you win outright. Like, this could be the adversity that the Canucks need to take down the road. First, get past Nashville, please. Don't let it go back to Nashville for game 6. Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'm such a narrative person, like, being a writer, that's, like, what I'm interested in. Again, not trying to get ahead of ourselves, but yes, like, maybe winning ugly is the key to writing Canucks playoffs narrative. And I do think, yeah, it's clear to me that they also know, like, they got away with one here, so, like, boot up the backside as well.
Yeah. Speaking of Abbotsford, what's going on in Abbotsford? Actually, not in Abbotsford, not in Abbotsford, down in Colorado.
Yeah. They're, like, having themselves a series, too. So, Babe Canucks won their series tonight, or this afternoon on a Sunday, pretty much. Like, I think whilst it was the intermission before overtime. But, yeah. You know, the Baby Canuck said, screw you, Anna. Zach Solchenko said, you had no faith in me, Anna, but I'm going to show you.
Hey. The Baby Canucks not only had no faith in you, they tried to get that series done in 2 games.
Yeah.
With the most unexpected, like, we're talking about the Canuck, Big Canucks coming back. No, the Baby Canucks were trying to do it, and they weren't as successful. It was Vancouver was in overtime, but they got it done the next game.
Yeah, and Zach Solchenko kept the Eagles off the scoreboard until the third period. So, like, and he won sort of, you know, the player presented player of the game 2 out of 3 games. So, really, like, screw you, Anna. Like, Zach Solchenko is a stud, clearly, and Abbotsford are going to win the Calder Cup. And he's gonna be the sole reason why.
You've heard it here first. Abbotsford's gonna win the Calder Cup.
I'm only positive about them. Yeah.
So. Yeah. And if we take a glance around the rest of the league, so again, when we sort of gave you our prognostications, it was a game-ish in for most of the series. Dallas found a way to win a game against the Golden Knights. They're down 2-1. They won in overtime, but suffice to say that series was close to be a 3-over for Dallas. Like, if Dallas is down 3-over, they're not coming back from that.
Yeah.
Colorado has the Jets number. The Jets got that one win in the, you know, 4,000 goal game. Yeah,
that's right.
Colorado has got the next 3, and Winnipeg isn't looking so good. Edmonton beat LA last night, and that game was interesting. If you were a Kings fan, you suggest the NHL referees are out to get you. I kind of felt like LA had kind of lost the plot a little, but Edmonton's up 2-1 in that series. Over in the East, Florida's likely going to go through their 3-1 on Tampa. Boston, 3-1 on Toronto. I don't think either one of us wanted Boston to win, but then, hey, if Toronto has to lose, it's not too bad.
Exactly.
Center of the Universe is just freaking out, Anna.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean.
Washington had a run. They're Washington is done 4-0. They're out. New York is going to take on someone, and it could very well be decided tomorrow. Carolina's up 3-1 on the Islanders, though that series could very well have been over had it not been for some late game heroics too. So a whole lot of 3-1 out there, Anna.
Yeah. honestly, the games are pretty much playing out, save for a couple of results, how I expected. I called Vegas to win, and I hate being right, but I think Vegas are going to win. But yeah, like, the fact that Carolina aren't done yet is maybe the biggest shock to me. But yeah, like, the New York-Washington series, like, they had no business being in the playoffs. If it wasn't for Torts pulling a goalie, they wouldn't be. So, yeah, no real surprise. Their team is old. Sorry, Ovi, but, like, you can't. You're too old to do this by yourself now.
Yeah, I would have thought that Washington had a win in them. But New York's just, they're on a mission. Like, I half expect the East to be New York, Florida, and Florida will likely come through. I know there's some out there that suggest Boston's going to beat the likes of Florida. I just don't see it. But, you know, Boston has done stranger things against strong teams of Florida, the state of Florida. Yeah, when we get together next week, we'll have a better idea what's going on, and there could very well be a round two schedule in front of us, which could impact our recording schedule. We're working under the premise right now that we're recording next Sunday. If there's a game seven, maybe not, or maybe, because who knows when the start time is. They won't decide that until that game seven, if necessary, is planned. And then, is it possible that if all the series were to end, that there's games? Maybe. Stay tuned. You had put a note here that we needed to drop a quick F word for Mark Mithon. What did Mark do? I haven't heard anything. I tried a quick Google, couldn't find anything.
Okay. Just a terrible take about trans women in sports. But I just want to put it out there. I would love that all the people that claim to be protecting women in sports would give an F about women in sports at any other time than when it suited their narrow-minded agenda. There's a whole complex issue to trans inclusion in sports. No one's saying it's easy and to figure out, but I think it's like the attitude that some people have, yeah, under the pretense of protecting women, is just, oh, it's ignorant. It's really just, like, comes from a place, no, it's not coming from a good place, that, like, I think it's just delusional to think that it's coming from a place of protecting women. It's really not. And have to say, trans women are women. I think that's a good and inclusive place to start. And if you go with that attitude forward, and find a way to be inclusive rather than exclusive, that's the right way to go about things. But yeah.
No, I completely agree. And I think anyone who's listened to us knows that as a show, but, you know, collectively, the two of us, we are very much in favor of inclusion, like, choose inclusion, not exclusion. And we're also progressive in the sense that let's move forward and let's evolve sport, more specifically hockey, into a game that allows everyone and anyone to take part without worry about discrimination or, in this particular case, misogyny, to do a disservice.
Yep. That's it.
I hadn't heard that, but thank you for raising that. And I think, you know, it's an important topic that we need to continue to elevate. So here we are at the end of a show, a little bit over an hour, probably, when all said and done. The Vancouver Canucks are currently up 3-1 against the Nashville Predators. I imagine the party is still going on strong at Scott Road and 72nd, which, for those that don't know, Metropolitan Vancouver, it is the divider between the city of Delta and the city of Surrey. And Scott 72 somehow has become a hub. This happened, I think, in 2011, maybe 2010. It just, people started to congregate and party to the point now that all they people do is they drive by with their Canucks flags, honking their horn, playing music, and then people collect on the streets and they just cross the street. Like, it's not shut down the intersection. Mm-hmm. It's like very controlled and celebratory. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Especially for a population that doesn't have an outdoor viewing party.
Yeah.
Well, I should correct that. Port Coquitlam had a viewing party. Delta had a viewing party. Like, there are sort of smaller ones, but not like a collective, hey, let's get a lot of people here.
Yeah.
That's anyhow. Cool. Scott 72, it's where the party's at. Mm-hmm. Anna, any final words of wisdom?
We can't take much more of this, so get it done in 5, please, Canucks.
Words of wisdom from me. Never believe that you're going to be confident for all the wrong reasons, or the right reasons for that matter. You never know which goaltender is going to be in net. If you have some thoughts as to which goaltender is going to be net and whether or not the Canucks can get it done in 5, the best way to do that is to engage with us. You can engage with us on social media. We're at the C4 Podcast in most places except for Threads, where we're at the real C4 Podcast. I did put a note on that account to say, engage you and I specifically. I'm at Lightforce, you're at A4003. But you can also take part in the conversation in C4 Discord at discord.io/C4podcast, where we talk about all sorts of things. It's not as active as a conversation as it once was, because I think we're all focused on life. The podcast has grown up over the years, and many of us have families and things outside of hockey, which is kind of shocking. But it's still always a lively conversation anytime the news breaks, or someone goes and gets some decent food. Like, Jay probably went to that pizza place that he keeps raving about because it's his birthday today. Friend of the show, Jay. So happy birthday, Jay.
Happy birthday.
If you've also, you know, are so inclined and you want to support our show financially, you can do so by going to support.c4podcast.com, or alternatively, where you're for, or you can go to Buy Me a Coffee, which is also what we refer to as
Buy Me a Pint.
You can drop a couple of bucks our way to buy us a pint, or alternatively, sign up to a monthly or annual subscription. And if you were to go with the annual subscription, you get an exclusive C4 sticker. Or you happen to live in the UK, where Anna took a buttload of those stickers and handed them out to the crowd. I've yet to see any on, like, you know, the BBC, but it's only a matter of time.
Totally.
So on behalf of Anna, A4003, myself, Chris at Lightforce, I'm going to sign off this episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast with We Out.